a Chinese man and a Jewish man were eating lunch together, and suddenly, without any warning, the Jew got up, walked over to the Chinese guy, smashed him in the mouth, sent him sprawling across the floor. Chinese man picked himself up, rubbed his jaw, and he said, "What in the world did you do that for?" And the Jew said, "That's for Pearl Harbor." The Chinese man was astonished. He said, "Pearl Harbor? I didn't have anything to do with Pearl Harbor. I'm Chinese. It was the Japanese that bombed Pearl Harbor." And the Jew said, "Chinese, Japanese, Taiwanese, they're all the same to me." Well, with that, they both sat down again, and before too long, the Chinese man got up, walked over to the Jew, smashed him in the jaw, and knocked him out of his chair. And the Jew yelled. He said, "What in the world did you do that for?" And the Chinese man said, "That's for the Titanic." The Jew said, "The Titanic?" He said, "I didn't have anything to do with the Titanic." The Chinese man said, "Goldberg, Feinberg, Iceberg, they're all the same to me." And when it comes to Christians, they are not all the same. Some are spiritual, some are carnal. Carnal is a word that describes a Christian who continues to yield to the desires of the old sin nature. Fleshly or worldly are other words commonly used to describe that kind of a person. Even though born again, the carnal Christian continues to be dominated by his or her old nature. The Apostle Paul describes the Corinthian Christians as being carnal. Listen to it. 1 Corinthians 3, verse 1. "And I, brethren, could not speak to you as to spiritual people, but as to carnal, as to babes in Christ. I fed you with milk and not with solid food. For until now you were not able to receive it, and even now you're still not able, for you are still carnal. For where there are envy, strife, and divisions among you, are you not carnal and behaving like mere men?" Paul describes two possibilities in your Christian walk. You can be spiritual or you can be carnal. The word spiritual, when applied to men and women, is used of your relationship to God in one of two ways: positionally and practically. Christians are spiritual in their position before God, but they can be very carnal in their practices. And probably the best example of a spiritual man and a carnal man side by side in the Old Testament is Abraham and Lot. Lot's life stands out in stark contrast to Abraham, whom the Bible calls the father of faith. Abraham is representative of the spiritual man, and Lot is representative of the carnal man. Now, just as a footnote, as you read about Lot here in the Old Testament, it is very, very difficult to believe that he was a believer of any kind. In fact, you have to read all the way through, almost to the end of the entire Bible, to 2 Peter 2, 7 and 8, to get any indication that Lot was a saved man. We just read that. In those two verses, he is called righteous three times. Listen to it again. "And delivered righteous Lot, who was oppressed by the filthy conduct of the wicked, for that righteous man, dwelling among them, tormented his righteous soul from day to day by seeing and hearing their lawless deeds." Now, interestingly, the word righteous is the exact same word that is used for Abraham when it says Abraham believed God and God declared him righteous. So there you have a statement that Lot was a believer, but you have to go almost all the way through the whole Bible before you can find out that he was. It is a sad thing to so live that people have to read almost through the whole Bible to find any evidence or indication that you are a saved person. And I wonder about some of you. When people look at your life, do they have to search for some verse in the Bible to indicate that you are a believer at all? May God help every one of us who know the Lord to so live that people will not have to ever wonder about our salvation, but will know indeed that Jesus Christ has really changed our life. Lot is a picture of an all too common occurrence today. He is a picture of a believer who is a backslider. He's a picture of a person who has union with the Lord, but does not have communion with the Lord. Lot is a believer who lived for time instead of eternity. Lot was a man who had a saved soul, but a lost life. 1 Corinthians 3:13. Each one's work will become clear, for the day will declare it, because it will be revealed by fire, and the fire will test each one's work of what sort it is. If anyone's work which he has built on it endures, he will receive a reward. If anyone's work is burned, he will suffer loss, but he himself will be saved, yet so as through fire. Lot was a saved man, but he had a lost life. He escapes through a corridor of fire. The Bible tells us that there are those believers, and though they do not look like they're saved, their lifestyle gives very little evidence that they are, they will be so as by fire. Lot was a believer, and yet his life became a hell on earth. Lot was a saved man, but he did not live like it. He's the example of what the Bible calls a carnal man. As Paul said to the believers in 1 Corinthians 3, you are still carnal and walk as men. Paul was saying to them, you are saved, but you are not acting like it. The same thing could have been said of Lot. Lot was a carnal Christian who lived a life controlled entirely by the flesh. Instead of the flesh being a servant of Lot, Lot was a slave to his flesh. And there are a lot of Lots today. Many who are saved live a life that is controlled by the flesh. They are saved, but carnal. Their life belongs to Christ, but their love belongs to the world. Now, just as another footnote, remember where we've been when it comes to Abram. Abram, whose name, of course, later was changed to Abraham, has been called by God to move to a land that God himself would show him. In fact, God told Abraham to leave his home, leave his family, leave absolutely everyone in his family, and follow God. But that's not exactly what Abram did. At first, he moved from Ur with his father, with his brother, and his dead brother's son, Lot, to Haran. They were still in Babylon. And after the first leg of the journey, it was Lot and Abram who continued to journey to the land of Canaan. When a famine hit, Abram went down to Egypt. It was at this point that Abram claimed Sarai. Her name would later be changed to Sarah. That was his wife. He claimed that she was his sister out of fear that Pharaoh would kill him to have Sarai. They were then kicked out of Egypt because of Abram's deception. So they headed back now to the land of Canaan. And when they got there, Abram went back to Bethel, which means house of God, where he had first built an altar to the Lord. There's a good reason why Abram returned to this site. He needed to go back to the place where he had started and renew his walk once again with God. Coming up out of Egypt, he realized the terrible error that he had made and that he had walked away from God. And so he determined to go back to the place where he had first worshipped, the place of his first altar and commitment to the Lord. Interestingly, Lot is never depicted as building or worshiping at an altar in any of the Genesis records that we have. This is the testimony of Abraham's spirituality. Then in verse 5, where we left off last time, it says, Lot also, who went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. Now up to this time, any time that you read of Lot, it is always in connection with Abram. We are told first that he is Abram's nephew. From then on, it's always that he went with Abram. That sums up Lot's whole life up to this point. He went with Abram. Wherever Abram was, Lot was. When Abram stopped, Lot stopped. You see, Lot was wonderfully blessed because of his close affiliation with Abram. As long as he traveled with him and followed his uncle's example, he too was blessed. As Abram grew in wealth, so did Lot. The blessing of God overflowed from Abram onto all of those that were around him. And so it is in the family and the household of those men and women whose husbands and wives, mothers and fathers, who love the Lord and follow him faithfully. Their families are blessed. They enjoy the overflow of the goodness of God as he pours it on those who look to him. How many husbands are blessed because of the love and the devotion of their wives for the Lord? How many wives enjoy the overflow of grace God pours on their husbands? How many children are steeped in the goodness of God because of the faith of their parents? But the sad thing is that, like Lot, they don't really realize the blessing they enjoy is just that, the blessing and the favor of God poured out on their life, or their wife, or their husband, or their mother, or their father. Then there comes a point in their life when they're faced with a decision, a choice. God brings them to the place where they can no longer remain to enjoy a second-hand relationship with him. They need to have their own relationship with God. The blessing that they've enjoyed can no longer continue as an overflow from someone else. God wants to bless them directly and make them the source of overflow onto others. And I just want to say a word to those who are a little bit younger here this evening. Know this, that there will come a day, and for some it's already come, when you will face a choice. That choice will be to choose God for yourself. No one can live the life of faith for you. No one can carry you in the Christian walk. You can enjoy the overflow of God's blessing on others, but that is not enough. God wants to bless you. It begins with you making that crucial choice, that most important of all decisions that everyone faces, to live for God or to live for the world. Lot also, who went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. Now the land was not able to support them, that they might dwell together, for their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. Both Uncle Abe and nephew Lot were very wealthy. They both had flocks and herds, servants and tents. In fact, they both had so much that there really was no room for both of them to be able to live together. There was not enough pasture space, not enough water to take care of both. The Ponderosa was not big enough for both, and the cowboys of Lot found themselves fighting with the cowboys of Abraham. A range war was about to break out. Now, this is the very first time that wealth is mentioned in the Bible. And it causes a big problem. But the Bible never, ever accuses Lot and Abram of the sin of having wealth and doing well. The Bible always, when it speaks about wealth and to wealth and the stewardship of it, says that a person who has been blessed abundantly with wealth must be a good steward of his possessions. God expects a man to possess his possessions, but not to let his possessions possess him. Abram was a spiritual man. He took the blessings of God, and he will handle them very wisely. Lot was a carnal man. He will take the blessings of God and handle them foolishly. Now, another footnote. God blessed them, and God gave them material prosperity. But do you notice that this verse indicates that there was a spiritual dimension to their prosperity? Notice what it says in verse 5 again. Lot also, who went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. There was a spiritual dimension. They had all of this wealth, but they were living in tents. You can almost imagine that as they began to prosper, Abraham said to his nephew Lot, now remember, Lot, All of these material possessions are just temporary. Don't ever let these things pull you down. Keep your eyes on another world. Remember, this world is not our home. We are living in tents. We are strangers and pilgrims down here. Don't let material things get your eyes off of things that really matter. And today, you and I are living in a culture that is filled with materialism. We are a material culture. We are a prosperous culture in so many ways. We are a society of cars. We're a society of expensive homes, computers, televisions, iPods, iPads, iPhones, every smartphone thing that you can think of, designer clothes, restaurants. And it's not wrong to have those things. It's not wrong to have material things. Just be sure that material things do not have you. As God continues to bless you, be very sure that as your salary goes up, your love for money goes down and your love for Jesus goes up. Now, notice what it says at the end of verse 7. The Canaanites and the Perizzites then dwelt in the land. That phrase is put in there to show us that they were watching this infighting. Those who had decided to follow God were quarreling over possessions. And here the heathen are, watching them quarrel over land rights. They didn't understand people who were supposed to know the Lord and walk with God, quarreling with each other. And they don't understand it today either. They don't understand it when Christian families walk in church every time that their doors are open, and yet they fight and quarrel with each other. They don't understand it when you work for them and you don't give a good day's work for what they're paying you. Or you cheat on them, or you back off your responsibility and they know that you are supposed to be a Christian. They don't understand that when you actually act worse than they do. Whether you realize it or not, unbelievers are always watching your life. How you treat your spouse, how you treat your kids, how you conduct yourself at work, on the road, when you're under stress, when you think no one is watching. And what they see will either draw them to Jesus or repel them. And sadly, many people will never listen to what any believer says because of what some believers are. Philippians 2:14. Do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless, children of God without fault, in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast the word of life. Well, Abram knew that strife among believers was a disgrace. So, verse 8, Abram said to Lot, please, let there be no strife between you and me, and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brethren. Abram's attention to the problem between Lot and himself speaks volumes now of his growing faith and his spiritual maturity. And Jesus said in Matthew 5:5, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Then he said in verse 9, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. As believers, we need to remember that we are members of one another, and that as sons of God and those who are destined to inherit the earth, we are called to be peacemakers. Look what Abram says in verse 9. Is not the whole land before you? Please, separate from me. Now, if you remember, God told Abram from the very beginning that he was to leave his family. And up to this point, he has blatantly disobeyed that command. God had a plan for Abram, and Lot was not a part of it. Lot was not a part of that plan. And Abram has now come to the realization that as long as he stays with Lot, God's will would not be done in his life. And if you are a Christian, God has a very special plan for your life. But the question is there a lot in your life that is keeping you from the plan of God? Excess baggage that God has already told you to leave behind? If you are hanging on to the lots of this life, whatever it might be, an ungodly business, an ungodly relationship, an ungodly vice, an ungodly item, whatever it is, you will not see the blessing of God and the plan of God unfold in your life. Abram has now come to the place in his life. He's come back to God. His relationship with God is now back on track. He has come to a place in his life that he turns to Lot and he says in faith, "Please, separate from me." It's as if he's saying, "Lot, God specifically called me to leave you. I wasn't strong enough to do it before, but now I am. You make your choice. If you take the left, then I will go to the right. Or if you go to the right, then I will go to the left. Do what you want to do. I'll take the leftovers." Now, back in verse 8, Abraham said, "Please let there be no strife between you and me, and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brethren." Now, was Abram really Lot's brother? No. Abram was the uncle, deserving of family respect and first pick, but he gave Lot the right to choose. To keep the family relationship, Abram forsook his right as an older relative, lowered himself to that of a brother, and made the first move to resolve differences. Abram should be the one who makes this decision. He should be the one who gets first pick. But he graciously lets Lot make the choice of where he wants to go. And that really is an amazing thing when you think of it. Because it looks like Abram now is ready to give up the promised land. Think about that. What if Lot says, "Well, now, let's see. I think I'll take the way of Canaan. You can go down to Sodom. I'll take the land of milk and honey." Do you see what Abram is finally doing here? He's leaving it up to the Lord. He's being obedient to the Lord and then trusting him for the results. That's faith. Abram had learned a very important lesson from his failure in going down to Egypt. Back then, he had seen a problem, he had seen a need, and he just set about to take care of it all by himself. Now, instead of making a decision, pressing forward and implementing it, he casts his fate totally in the Lord's hands. He had learned that the best course is to surrender to the Lord as the God even of his circumstances. So we see now that Abram is growing in his faith. He says, "If you take the left, then I'll go to the right. Or if you go to the right, then I will go to the left." Abram was giving Lot the opportunity to make the first choice. And life is a series of choices, isn't it? And the choices we make determine the path we travel. In fact, your life is but the sum total of the decisions that you make. If you want to know how your life is going to end up, it will be the sum total of the decisions that you make. Life is decisions. You are your decisions. So Lot is going to make some decisions, and his life is the tragic story of a man who made some horrible decisions. And as is in true of all of us, his decisions not only affected his life, but the life and the lives of those that he loved. But the circumstances of his life didn't cause the decisions that he made, just as the circumstances of life don't cause the decisions that you and I make. The circumstances do not determine your character, but they do display your character. It's like the storm that comes that blows against a tree. The tree falls, revealing the rottenness on the inside of the tree. The storm didn't cause the rottenness. It merely revealed the rottenness. You reveal yourself by the decisions which you make. Lot is getting ready to make a pivotal decision. And you can see the difference between the spiritual man and the carnal man. The spiritual man said, "Do whatever you wish. I want to do it God's way." But verse 10 says, "And Lot lifted his eyes and saw all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere, before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as you go toward Zoar. Now the Jordan Plain was a vast, lush and fertile area. And because of the rich vegetation and the fact that it is part of the Great Rift Valley, one of the major highways of the ancient world passed through there. The cities that lay along that highway then grew fabulously rich from the trade that passed by. Sodom and Gomorrah were two of those. But they were located at the distant southern end of the Jordan Valley. Verse 11, then Lot chose for himself all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east. Abram acted by what he could not see. Lot acted on what he could see. Now what is faith? Hebrews 11:1. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Now, notice that Lot chose for himself. It was a covetous decision. He never consulted God. He never sought out the Lord's direction. He simply looked around for the most visually appealing location. He looked out there and he saw this knee-high grass. He saw those lush pastures. He could just imagine his cattle sleek and well-fed. And he made a decision based upon one thing, materialism. He wasn't thinking about God. He wasn't thinking about Abraham. He wasn't thinking about his family. He just chose for himself. He was more interested in his gold than he was in God. He was more interested in his cattle than he was in his children. He was more interested in his fortune than he was in his family. And so he just simply chose for himself. Now notice what it says in verse 10 again. And Lot lifted his eyes and saw all of the plain of Jordan, and it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as you go toward Zoar. So on the one hand, it looks like the Garden of Eden. On the other hand, he says it looks just like Egypt. Now you have to keep in mind that Lot had been down in Egypt with Abram. And what Lot saw down in Egypt, he never forgot. It was a lot easier to get Lot out of Egypt than it was to get Egypt out of Lot. D.L. Moody said, and I quote, "The place of the ship is in the sea, but God help the ship if the sea ever gets into the ship." That's Lot's problem. He was in the world, and the world was in him. He had gone to Egypt with Abraham. When Abraham left Egypt, he took Lot out of Egypt, but he never got Egypt out of Lot. He had his appetite whetted for Egypt, and he says, in essence, "Oh, this is perfect. Here's a little bit of Eden and a little bit of Egypt." And that's what the carnal man tries to do. He tries to live in both worlds, see? He says, I can have my little bit of heaven right here, and I can have my little bit of earth right here. I'm going to take hold of God with one hand. I'm going to take hold of the world with the other hand. And that is exactly what the carnal Christian tries to do. But Jesus said, Matthew 6:24, "No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." He was saying, you cannot have it both ways. You can't have the world in one hand and the things of God in the other hand. And there are some Christians who want it just that way. They want to hold on to the world and they want to have the Lord at the same time. The desires of a carnal Christian are earthly. Even though he is saved, he still loves this world and longs for this world. Then Lot chose for himself all of the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated from each other. Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent even as far as Sodom. But the men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord. Lot made a decision, and he pitched his tent as far as Sodom. Now listen, it makes a difference where you pitch your tent. I've seen this happen so many times in my ministry. I've seen men who have made a decision to take a quote-unquote better job and move their family from a spirit-filled church to a place simply for financial gain. They didn't have to go. Their families were happy. They wanted to stay. But the lure of the money was bigger, and because they wanted to better themselves, they made a decision not based on the will of God, but on a choice of more money. It is a very dangerous thing to apply the money standard to every decision that you make in your life. I like what James Boyce said, and I quote, "You may think that you are different from Lot, but if you have put your job ahead of your family's spiritual life, if you have put your social advancement ahead of a proper association with God's people, if you have let your choice of a home keep you from a church in which you can grow in faith and worship, you have moved from the highlands to the plain of Jordan." End quote. So watch what you do. Watch where you make your choices. Watch where you pitch your tent. Lot had a miserable ending because he made the wrong decision and he pitched his tent toward Sodom. We're going to see that he began to forsake the life of a nomadic shepherd in favor of the life in the city. And as he became more and more accustomed to that lifestyle, he migrated to the Las Vegas of the day, Sodom. Later in Genesis, we find that Lot forsook the nomadic life altogether. He's not only living in Sodom, he's now one of the civic leaders, sitting on the city council. Then in Genesis 19, you will see Lot in a cave. His wife is turned into a pillar of salt, and he ends up in a drunken fit. His daughters have sexual intercourse with him in that drunken state. He impregnates them both, and they beget the Ammonites and the Moabites. Why? Because Lot made the choice to pitch his tent in the wrong direction. Every one of us comes to a fork in the path of life. To the left is the path that Lot chose. To live by sight rather than faith. To follow the wisdom and counsel of the world instead of God. To embark on that path will lead at first through green pastures and verdant hills. But it's a slippery route which quickly ends through sinister and subtle traps that are aimed at destroying you, while all the while telling you that you're having a great time. To the right is the path that leads to life. This is the route Abraham chose. And the Lord, verse 14, said to Abram, after Lot had separated from him, "Lift your eyes now and look from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, and westward. For all the land which you see, I give to you and your descendants forever." Notice that this takes place after Lot separated from him, not while he was still hanging on to him, but after he leaves Lot. In essence, God says, "I've just been waiting for you to let go of Lot." And whatever it might be in your life, if you are holding on to something that is ungodly, and you know that it is sin in your life, you are not going to experience the blessings or the plan or the path of God until you let go of some of that excess baggage. And for some of you this evening, all God is waiting for is for you to let go of a lot so He can pour out into your life an abundance of blessing. and I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that if a man could number the dust of the earth, then your descendants also could be numbered. Abram chose God's way and inherited the land. Lot pitched his tent toward Sodom and ended up in a cave. No one ever gets shortchanged that puts God first in his or her life. When a spiritual man obeys God, the blessing of God comes upon him. Now that doesn't mean that when we make spiritual choices that God is always going to bless us in physical and material things. But God is going to bless us in spiritual ways. Sometimes it will mean in material ways, beyond anything that we could even imagine or think. For God has a purpose in every Christian's life. The carnal man will always live to regret the direction that he took. But the spiritual man will never regret that he served God. Someone has written, "But to every man there opens a highway and a low, and every man decides which way his soul shall go." Verse 17, God says, "Arise, walk in the land through its length and its width, for I give it to you." God gave Abram the land, but Abram had to step out and appropriate it. There is always that appropriation of faith, isn't there? God gives us his promises, but it's important that we then step out and appropriate the promises of God, where we lay hold of his promises. It is interesting that 400 years later, Joshua will come in with the children of Israel to claim this land that God is giving to Abram right here. And God says to Joshua, "Every place you put your foot, I have given it to you. It's all yours. All you have to do is just go in, put your foot down, and claim it. Every place you put your foot down, I have given it to you. So go in and take it." That appropriating the promises of God. And every place that you step out and appropriate the promises of God in his word, you're going to find that God is always faithful. He has given it to you. It is yours. But it's not yours until it has been appropriated by faith. "Arise, walk in the land through its length and its width, for I give it to you." Then Abram moved his tent and went and dwelt by the terebinth trees of Mamre. Now, Mamre means fatness, the place where the soul is made fat with the fullness of supply. "And went and dwelt by the terebinth trees of Mamre, which are in Hebron." Hebron means fellowship. "And built an altar there to the Lord." So Abram built an altar to the Lord. In the place of fatness and fellowship, Abram confessed again by the building of an altar that he was nothing but a fallible human being, without any strength really in himself, needing that constant supply of the cleansing of God. How many times now have you already seen where Abram built an altar? Wherever God was moving and he was obedient to God, Abram got there and he built an altar to praise and serve his Lord and his God. Even though God promised Abram the entire land, he lived in a tent, and he just moved from place to place. The only thing Abram left behind, the lone testimony to his presence, were the altars that he built to worship God. He built no cities. He built no permanent dwelling place, even though God said the land belonged to him. His life of faith in following the Lord is symbolized by that tent and those altars. The evidence of Abram's presence, the testimony he left behind, was that he was a worshiper of God. Now, if Lot could come back and speak to us today, what do you think he would say? I think he would really exhort us to watch our decisions, because decisions determine destiny, and to watch the small decisions. He would tell us not to compromise with sin, to deal with sin when it first rears its ugly head. And I think that he would tell all of you Christians out there who are not walking with God to repent and get right before judgment falls, to not be as foolish as he was and lose it all. But to every man there opens a highway and a low, and every man decides which way his soul shall go. Joshua said, Joshua 24:15, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your father served that were on the other side of the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. The choice is yours. You must choose this day if you are going with Uncle Abraham or with Nephew Lot. Let's pray.